I'll run your presentation, Maysam, because I'm recording. Okay?
Sure.
Okay.
So my presentation today is about cardiac effects of seizures. As you might remember, 2 weeks ago, I came up with a question that should we process...
Sorry, Professor, can you please share the screen?
Sorry. I certainly can. Okay.
Right. Thanks. Okay.
You also, the slides are also online in the lectures
directly? Yeah, I see it. Okay.
Yeah. 2 weeks ago, I came up with a question that should you process EKG channels, EKG channel beside EEG channels in the process of analyzing of EEG signals. I will give more explanation during the presentation, but the first time that I've heard that we should process EKG channel, I've heard this sentence from Dr. Naomi from Jefferson Hospital. And then when I started to search about this area, I found that she has a very important article about cardiac effects of seizures. So it's not a field in neurology that people are sure about the results. It's a kind of research area that's going on. So there is not any certainty in the results about cardiac effects of seizures. But there are interesting issues in this area that I started to explain. Most of things that I will go to discuss in this presentation are from two articles. One of them is by Dr. Marami Ney from Jefferson Hospital. I think you know her, Dr. Pekonen.
Dr.
Marami Ney. She's a Chinese-American doctor, and she's usually beside Dr. Sperling.
I don't know if we met her.
Okay. So could you please go to the first slide?
Oops.
Yeah. Most of the subjects that I'm going to talk about them are from two papers. One of them is from Dr. Marami Ney from Jefferson Hospital. She's completely familiar with our project. Another one is from Dr. Gottman group. They also worked on cardiac effects of seizures, and I think they were looking in cardiac effects of seizure for automatic analysis of EEG signals. And so, seizure frequently affect the heart rate and rhythm, and in most of the cases, seizure-related cardiac changes are transient and do not appear to cause clinically significant abnormalities for the patient. But as you can see, great interest in this area of research is related to one word that we should know about them, SUDEP. And it's not mostly about the diagnosing of EEG signals. While there are clear but rare complications from seizure-related cardiac
arrhythmias.
Sorry?
Arrhythmias, not arithmetic. Arrhythmias.
it's a hard word.
It's a hard word. Got a lot of consonants.
The overall risk of seizures on cardiac status and any potential connection between seizures and SUDEP still remain uncertain.
What is ictal? I hate to even try to pronounce that word because it sounds kind of dirty.
Acetylcholine.
What?
When you are having Caesar, it's called ictal, and pre-ictal is...
How do you pronounce that next word?
Second word.
Asystole?
I looked at it. It's one of this one type of the seizure that's dangerous. And
asystole?
Yes.
Asystole, like a systolic?
Can result syncope.
What's syncope?
Syncope means the sudden stop of heart. Like.
Okay, good.
Asystole.
So NIH has a big SUDEP project going on right now, and we're kind of tangentially involved in that, or trying to interact with people who are involved in that. It's a very, because it involves the death of young children, it's one of these research areas with a lot of social impact or a lot of support.
It's very important.
Nobody likes babies to die.
Yeah. So what is SUDEP? In a few next slides, I explain about SUDEP. SUDEP is the sudden, unexpected death of someone with epilepsy who was otherwise healthy. Each year, more than 1,000 people with epilepsy die from SUDEP. And,
I'm actually a little bit surprised by that. For some reason, I thought this was sudden infant death syndrome. SIDS, but I guess it's something different.
Yes, I'm not talking about that one. SIDS, no, SUDEP. It's another thing. I know what's that one, but I'm talking about SUDEP.
This doesn't apply to just babies. This is any...
Yes, this is to all related to all of the people who have epilepsy. And honestly, other few slides are a little sad, but this is a fact in epilepsy that before this, I thought that people who have epilepsy don't die from this patient. They just suffer from this patient. But now I know that there is a chance about 1 per 1,000 to die from epilepsy without any specific reason. Because we don't, I will explain more. So for all of people who have epilepsy, 1 out of 1,000 people can die from SUDEP. And it occurs more frequently in people with epilepsy whose seizures are poorly controlled, like people who don't take their drug on time, they are careless about their drug, or people who have very advanced seizures. So for those people, 150 people can die from SUDEP. SUDEP is the leading cause of death in young people with certain types of uncontrolled epilepsy, and it creates a lot of sad issues in the families of people who have children with epilepsy.
What
I mean, they are always concerning about this situation, that it's possible that their children won't wake up in the morning.
What percentage of people have epilepsy?
I had those numbers, and I can share it with you, but no, I cannot.
Approximately.
Approximately, I think, one in the world.
It's pretty common, yeah, it's pretty common, right?
1 per 10,000 or 1 per 1,000, something like that. It's pretty common.
Okay, right, so let's say 1 per 1,000, and then one of those 1 per 1,000 dies, so this is 1 in a million. So 1 in a million means if there's 300 million people in America, 300 people a year die, which is not a lot, actually. It's unfortunate, but, you know, it's when you look at the business side of medicine, that's not a lot, right? There's people die from a lot more people die from other things.
But if you look at the world, it's a lot. Why you are telling 300? Because it's
you said one in a thousand have
one
in a thousand have epilepsy.
Yes.
One in of those people who have epilepsy, 1 in 1,000 die from SUDEP.
Yeah, 1 per million.
So that's 1 per million, and there's 300 million people in America. So that means 300 people a year.
But if you look
Not even a year, because the one in a thousand is not per year; it's total population.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. Not as common as you would think.
Oh, yes, fortunately not as common. But again, there are something. I mean, you know, the sad part about this is how much you're suffering from the fact that you are facing with this or this without any reason. You know, you should consider also the psychological impacts of this issue.
That's what I'm considering is actually the legal impact of these issues. So I think the problem is, to be honest, that those one in a thousand that die are going to sue the hospital. So the hospital kind of knows they're going to get sued. So they're interested in understanding it, because those are going to be big lawsuits, millions of dollars.
So at this point, currently, no one knows what causes SUDEP. SUDEP occurs more often at night or during your sleep, and the death is not witnessed, leaving many questions unanswered. The person with epilepsy is often found dead in bed and doesn't appear to have bad convulsive seizure.
They just die in their sleep?
Mostly.
They don't start convulsing or anything?
No.
Because they have video, these people, because they're typically in...
It's in home. The problem, I will explain more.
Okay.
The problem is that they cannot record this, the EEG signals of these patients. Because of that, they cannot find the answer. There may be evidence that the person had a seizure before dying, but this isn't always the case. About a third of them do show evidence of a seizure close to the time of death. They are often found laying face down.
That's sort of the sudden infant death syndrome problem also. They now say babies should not sleep on their stomachs and all that kind of stuff. Do they have people who die from SUDEP who are in like an EMU or an ICU?
Most of the cases are in homes, completely healthy people.
Okay, so they don't have, because I would think they would have video then on those people. So
yeah, no, the problem is that they don't have. They don't have it. Yeah. So I will explain a little about what is the situation of current researchers on SUDEP. Currently, there are kind of four theories for what can cause SUDEP, but no one can prove that each one of them is correct. The first one is related to breathing. A seizure, we know that a seizure typically may cause a person to briefly stop breathing. We call this apnea. And if this breathing pauses lasts too long, they can reduce the amount of oxygen that gets to the heart and the brain. Another one is related to heart rhythm. A seizure may cause a dangerous heart rhythm or cardiac arrest. But again, in most of the seizures, it's not like that. I mean, seizures don't create a dangerous heart rhythm. It's rarely create dangerous heart rhythm. And brain function, seizures may suppress or interfere with the function of vital areas in the brain stem. These areas are responsible for breathing and heart rate, as well as other important body function. And the fourth theory is related that the combination of these issues that are related to breathing, heart, and brain can cause SUDEP. Can we go to the next slide? So I will also explain what can we do. The biggest problem is a lack of data for SUDEP. In fact, some of this information, Dr. Pekonik, is coming from ACNS. There were some presentation, and these are the summary of those presentation also. The first step is developing a recording system for smartwatches or smartphones that record EEG data continuously.
Yeah, everybody keeps talking about that, but smartwatches don't and smartphones don't solve the problem of all the sensors.
Yes,
You can't get an EEG. You know, these commercials and these startup companies act like you can get an EEG from your wrist or something. You can't.
You can use some gels around the ears.
Yeah.
You can use some.
This is what Apple. This is one of the things Apple's trying to do.
Yes. And for example, again, you can implant some electrodes in the brain, or there is also kind of.
Well, there's headsets.
Yes, headsets, right. For during the sleep. You know, if someone has very advanced seizure, they can use headset. I don't know. Because of that, I wrote that the first step is developing a recording system. Because we don't have a kind of recording system.
Well, they have ambulatory EEG systems that they could use.
But it's right. Very temporary, because
they're very uncomfortable.
A lot of things around head, right. And something like that. So your head is going to be two times of your usual head.
Right.
So these data can help neurologists to study SUDEP and find the main reason of SUDEP. And I believe by developing such a system and gathering data after a few years, we might predict SUDEP also.
Right.
So on getting back to the seizure-related cardiac abnormalities, in adults and children, most complex parts... No, I'm talking about other things besides SUDEP. About the part that what is the cardiac effects of seizures on EEG signals. In adults and children, most complex partial and generalized tonic-clonic seizures cause an increase in heart rate.
So what's a tonic-clonic seizure?
Grand mal. So it's like sudden movements of muscles.
Of the
muscles.
That's a seizure in general, right?
Like there are two, grand mal and petit mal. Petit is for no movements at all.
Grand mal and petit mal.
Mm.
Is that term in your glossary?
No, I haven't included that.
Okay, so let's get that term in the glossary and come up with a better definition of it.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead, Maysam.
Okay, one research reported that 92% of 26 patients with temporal lobe seizures recorded by ambulatory EEG EKG monitoring were associated with a dominant increase in heart rate. But again, this is a report in this article. I found some articles that they are telling that rarely heart rate increases with seizures. And so, I mean, there are a lot of discussion about this. This is just one research. Seizures clearly cause both intractable and ictal cardiac abnormalities. And cardiac autonomic status is altered in patients with epilepsy, but the clinical significance of these findings, particularly their possible association with SUDEP, is unknown. Both cardiac and reciprocity functions are affected by seizures, and dysfunction of the reciprocity system during seizures can affect cardiac function.
Respiratory.
Respiratory. Yeah. Additional studies, particularly those combining multiple recording modalities to assess respiration, EKG, oxygenation, and EEG simultaneously are needed to further elucidate and relationship of seizure to cardiac status in epilepsy. In summary, I want to tell that these are the results of Dr. Maromine. There are a lot of discussions. They are not. So I will also explain a little about Gottman Group's result. They focus. I believe they wanted to know that can they use EKG for analyzing of EEG signals?
Right, this is what I think our colleagues at NIH and Australia are trying to do also.
Yeah. They analyzed retrospectively 281 seizures in 81 patients with intractable epilepsy who have prolonged video EEG and two-channel ECG. The nature and timing of heart rate changes compared to the electrographic and clinical seizure onset was determined. So this is their approach, their method. They found there was an increase in heart rate of at least 10 betas per minute in 73% of seizures. That means 92% of patients. And this occurred most often around seizure onset. In 22% of seizures, the rate increase preceded both the electrographic and the clinical onset. ECG abnormalities were found in 26% of seizures.
What do you mean by electrographic in this context? Is this, I'm guessing this is like they're measuring EKG electronically with a sensor, for example, versus using pulse or something like that?
I think it's recording EKG with electrodes.
Right.
Was my assumption, but I'm not sure about that. ECG abnormalities were found in 26% of seizures. That's not a lot.
That is not a lot.
Yeah. One patient had an, again, that word, stalled for 30 seconds. Lung seizure duration increased the occurrence of ECG abnormalities. No other risk factor was found.
Now that ECG abnormalities were found in 26% of seizures, I think what you're saying there is that the other 75% or 74% did not show anything in their EEG signals.
In their EKG or heart rate.
In their EKG signal.
Yes.
Okay.
And most of the research shows this result. That research from Japan.
But I'm a bit confused because you're saying they found there was an increase in heart rate for 93% of the patients.
Abnormalities. Heart rate is increasing.
Yeah, that's an abnormality. Yes or no?
I think it's just increased 10 beats per minute.
Yeah, that's like 12, 15%. What?
10 beats per minute.
I understand that. So they're not considering that an abnormality.
Yes.
Okay.
Heart rate changes occur frequently and occur around the time or even before the earliest electrographic or clinical change. The change can clarify the timing of seizure onset, and the specific rate pattern may be useful for seizure diagnosis and for automatic seizure detection. ECG abnormalities occur often and repeatedly in several seizures of the same patient. Can we go to the summary pages? I can. Yeah. So, in summary, and based on a lot of papers, not just these two papers, researchers are not certain on cardiac effects of seizures at this point. And great interest in this area of research has been generated because of the possible connection with pseudo. Analyzing of EKG channeling should not be considered in developing of auto-EEG in this phase of development. That was a kind of just personal opinion from Dr. Maromi. SUDEP is a great concept for people with epilepsy and their family. Yeah, this is Dr. Picona, this is the correct sentence. Yes, it doesn't create a lot of deaths, but it's a great concern.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things that are great concern, right? I mean, heart attacks are a great concern for everybody. You know, it's tough. So, but I mean, you know, the first bullet, researchers are not certain of cardiac effects. I mean, this is an easy PhD dissertation for one of our students with the TUH data because we have EKG channels on most of the EEGs.
From electrical engineering department, from neurology department, not electrical engineering department. Because you should know a lot of things, right?
No, I mean, we can certainly correlate changes in the EKG channel with changes in the EEG for seizures, right?
Right.
We've got thousands of, we haven't marked them yet, but we believe there's thousands of EEGs that we have that have seizures. And we've got EKG channels on those. So, I mean, that's like a slam dunk machine learning exercise.
That sentence is not from me, I mean.
I understand that. I'm just pointing out how, you know, when you're the neat thing about research, when you're in an active group, there's all sorts of problems to work on, right? Yeah. I mean, that's a PhD dissertation.
Yes, I wanted to emphasize that yes, this is this can be a PhD thesis, and I saw that sentence in a lot of papers.
Right.
Because they are just analyzing 100 people, and this paper, the result of this paper is against the result of another paper. So they cannot be sure that what's going on with this cardiac resources.
Good. Okay. So what I'm going to do next, we had a couple people out today. Sylvia's out, and Vinit had a busy week. So what I'm going to do...
I can still show the waveforms in my script.
Okay.
If you want.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we want to see more examples of seizures, right?
Okay.
That's what you were... And we want to see the alpha, the rhythmic signals, right?
Okay.
So, okay, if you want to show, if you...
Yeah, I couldn't do it in that function, but I did it on another script.
Yeah, I guess at this point I will, when I switch, give you the control, we'll lose the... Okay, so what are you showing us?
So in this file it says, starts from... 417.
Okay.
So starts from here.
Yeah, that's tough, right? I mean, you can sort of see it. You can convince yourself that you see it, but you certainly see it across a lot of channels, the kind of
almost all of them.
Periodic behavior. Okay.
So I think D7 at D9. The fourth one from bottom. This.
Yeah, you do, right.
Significantly
right.
Different from others, I think. So, should I?
Yeah, could continue. Yeah. Well, that was interesting.
It didn't work.
This is the same seizure we're looking at?
Yeah.
Thank you.
So the first one is the Caesar one.
And then the one on the right is prior to the seizure?
Yeah. Just a few seconds.
Well, that's interesting. So you can really see the rhythmic signals are really becoming periodic.
Mm.
Except for gamma. So do we believe that if you see that kind of periodic behavior across the rhythmic signals, that that's indication of a seizure? Is this T7? Okay. That's pretty striking. Okay. Is that it?
Yeah.
So that looks pretty good. I mean, that. Can we, do we have another example we can look at? You had that file, that text file of markings?
Mm-hmm.
Alright, so let's go. Whoop.
It's in another file. It's 15 years old male. And 15:10. It starts at
1082. So can you look at that one? So Scott, what we were looking at was for the previous image was pretty striking that when you see periodicity across the alpha, delta, theta, gamma was the noisy one, alpha, beta, delta, theta, right? But gamma was a bit noisy. So now we're looking at a second example just to see if we see similar behavior. The physician, the neurologist sort of infer the rhythmic signals by looking at the actual channels, but I've often felt it would be useful to just provide those as additional channels for their visualizations. So something going on there, 1082, is that where it started?
Yeah. Starts here.
So we see the rhythmic signals?
Which one?
What do you mean? Oh, which channel?
Yeah.
Well, I would use the same. Well, I guess the location of the seizure becomes an issue then, right? So in this case, T7, FT9. Which I think is what we looked at before, right?
Yes.
Is not as striking as like P7, T7. So let's use P7, T7. Or not, actually, let's use FP2, F8, just for kicks.
Okay. That one was a kid. Was 7 years old. And this one is...
Yeah, but with the specific channel is going to depend on where the seizure originates in the brain, right? What? You can't do it? I don't remember, FP2 something?
FP2
FH. Can you actually do 1080? Yeah, so you see increased activity on the rhythmic channels, but you also see the burstiness. So the seizure starts supposedly at 1082, and there's that burst, but then there's that period of quiet, and then there's another burst.
Maybe that goes.
And that's consistent with what's on that channel. But that's going to make it hard to do onset detection.
Here it's not. Here you cannot say it's kind of. Can you say like the other one?
Well, what I would say is you see increased activity on the four rhythmic channels, right? Not so much on theta. Theta is a little bit arguable, but certainly on delta, alpha, and beta. No, I'm sorry. Wait, your legend's here. The top signal is the original, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so on theta, alpha, and beta, you see increased activity, right? But you don't see it consistently because in the original signal, from 1085 to 1087, the signal quiets down. And therefore, the delta, theta, alpha, and beta rhythms quiet down. And then they pick up. So that raises a question, you know, when you talk about onset detection, when you see a burst, what's the maximum allowable time between that burst and another burst before it's, what, for it to be part of the same seizure or for it to be a new seizure? And probably the answer to that is like 60 seconds. So, that's sort of a pitch tracking problem. So it would be another interesting master's thesis would be comparing our machine learning results using the original signals versus using the rhythmic signals for something like seizure detection. right? And to see if there's a difference in performance. Okay, any other? Okay, that's pretty good. All right.
Three files.
What?
I got three files. Third one is 18.
Okay, let's look at 18.
18, 30.
When it shows that, does that mean it hasn't parsed it yet or something?
No, I was trying to manipulate one of the functions, and I put figure inside, so now it's annoying me. It starts at 541.
Okay, so let's look at. So, what do we think is going on with FZCZ there at 543?
Here? Mm-hmm. It's like it's 5. That's the figure, right?
Starts from there.
It's a seizure. It could be put it all from there.
Well, the seizure supposedly starts from 541, right?
Yeah.
But I'm having a little bit of trouble seeing that.
Yeah, could you put it open again? I want to see it for such a decade and it's different seizure.
Okay. Here?
Here.
Six. Seizure one, start time. 541. 1830.
18 seconds. Your show is show the 18 seconds, right?
I think so. Let me just confirm. Yeah.
So.
I don't see any significant.
So let's look at FZCZ and see what the
FZCZ.
Right.
Okay.
And let's look at it from about 540.
And can you please change the state and put it to the state? Maybe because you.
Yeah, yeah.
So we can go low and push it again.
So do you mean like it's going out of the window?
I saw that you set dampening the scale in a very low scale.
What?
Can we go to the alpha? Yeah.
It's 11:01. Is it okay?
Yeah, that looks good. So you see a little bit of burstiness on the alpha channel.
No, I mean you couldn't see it in time. Could you please open
the channel? That's FCCZ? We had a big pulse on FCCZ that I'm not seeing there.
Yes, this is fine because I want to say that you changed the time scale. Could you please increase the time scale? The amplitude scale?
See, at 5:43, we have that big pulse on FCCZ. Oh, you're doing 390 seconds in those windows?
No.
No? Well, go back to your...
You just run it like the...
Where's the, I don't see the pulse.
Maybe I picked the wrong channel. FCCZ at 5:43. Okay.
I think you picked the wrong channel.
Yeah.
Okay. Software under development. My problem is that on that display, I don't see the pulse.
This one.
Right? If you go back to the previous display. There's clearly a pulse at 5:43 on FCZZ, right?
Yep.
Now go to your other... This next plot, go to the next one. This is the same data supposedly, right? But I don't see a pulse at 5:43. But those are all the channels, right?
Because I haven't seen the channel here.
You mean the file name?
Yeah, it's 1830. I'm showing you.
Well, that would make a difference. J plus 2499, that looks awful.
Yeah, I'm scaling it to 10 seconds, so 256 is 250.
Yeah, I don't want to know. That kind of code is going to bite you big time when you change something.
Yeah, congratulations. No.
That doesn't look good.
Maybe you hit me. Ready? Start time. Okay.
Well, anyway, we get the idea. Like I said, I mean, I think it would make sense to try an experiment where you try to do pattern recognition on the rhythmic channels and compare that to the other channels, to the regular channels. I'm not saying you have to do that. I'm just saying for some of our students looking for thesis ideas. Okay, good. All right, very good. Thanks. Let me take the video back. No, that was good. That's getting there. Okay, so Scott, you with us? Can you see that?
I can't see the screen.
Okay, I have to share a screen, right?
Yeah. Right.
Okay. So this is some data that Stephen Tabachnik marked manually. And I think, you know, given we were looking at some EEGs earlier, you can see this is much more challenging because you've got these bursty things which appear to be events, but they're nothing.
CHPMIT is so clean.
What?
CHPMIT data is so clean.
This is not CHPMIT.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's not. It doesn't look real to me.
This is TUH data, which...
But TUH, I mean, the real EEG data is like, it's... This? Yes. Those CHPMIT, you see, it's so clean, so you can get good results on that.
So here, I was just going to go through some of this today. I mean, here he's marked some EKG events. He's marked artifacts. Here he's marked a spike. But that's probably not a meaningful spike.
What do you mean by nothing?
Probably it's not part of a seizure.
But it's spike.
So we asked him to mark this data to help us build better models of spikes and things like that. But we didn't ask him to associate those spikes with seizures. You can have spikes with, you know, you can have spurious spikes, right? So,
So I have a question. Are spikes symptom of a disease or not?
They are not. They are ambiguous. That's why automatic seizure detection algorithms have such a high false alarm rate.
How you are connecting these two subjects?
Well, because I believe. I'm not sure these spikes are indicative of a seizure occurring.
Maybe we can say it like that. all seizure have spine, but all spine
bikes are not seizure. Very good.
Okay, I accept this sentence, but do you think our brain generate spikes? I mean, as the healthy people.
Hopefully. Yes.
I think so.
Yes. Why? I don't know. But I do know that the high false alarm rate for seizure detection is due to spikes, spurious spikes, or benign spikes, however you want to describe it. So here's a spike. There's nothing. Well, this is the challenge, right? I mean, he looks at this and says, from a neurologist's point of view, there's nothing interesting here. We look at this and look at our textbooks and say, oh, you know, that looks like a seizure.
Yes.
So here's a pled. And I got to say, it's pretty amazing when you look at the real data. It's pretty amazing the level of performance we're getting with the baseline system. That we're getting, you know, such a high accuracy, especially on things like PLEDs and GPEDs. So here's a PLED, and you can see what distinguishes the PLEDs are the periodic behavior. But you'll also notice that it's not the distance between these pulses varies. And that's what gave rise to when Maison took a look at PLED frequencies, remember that. And the reality is they're all over the place. The fundamental frequency of a PLED, the change in that is not something that's necessarily indicative of a seizure event.
I would say this is seizure.
Yeah, well, he's saying nothing. And I tend to trust him because he's pretty good at reading these things. So this stuff could have been patient movement or eye movement. It's hard to say. Mm-hmm. So here he marked a vertex. And it seems to me that the reason he's marking that is because it has this negative deflection. The polarity, it goes down first and then up. But it's happening over, but you know, you'll notice that it's happening over a pretty large time scale. This is 2 seconds. These are all 10-second windows. So we wouldn't necessarily call that a triphasic wave, even though there's the triphasic kind of behavior of negative, positive, negative.
There. Is that
the
EKG channel?
The EKG channel is somewhere in here. Yeah, I'm not sure what he meant by KG, unless he was looking at the I think he was only working from paper on this, so
by reference, what reference we are taking over here in this montage?
That's the way Temple labels the electrodes.
Okay, so it says F8T4.
I think it is F8T4.
Is what?
I think F8-T4.
Right.
Right. I would say this is essentially F8 minus T4.
Mm-hmm. What montage do they use?
This is this should be a TCP montage. So here we have a spike, and then we have what he thinks might be a seizure.
This is an exception, or we have annotation for seizures?
This is part of our annotated data.
So, but we didn't enter seizure information.
No, because at the time we did this, we were interested in just this six-class detection.
So I want to know that, do we have more than these seizures in annotations by ST?
We did not ask him to mark seizures.
Okay.
So if we're going to have to go back, what I'm hoping we can do, we were going to get access to, what was that company, the software company?
Optimal?
No, the one in San Diego, starts with a P.
Cortico?
No.
It's P?
The one that has sold their software to all these other vendors.
Oh, Persist.
Persist. We were supposed to get a version of their software, and I was hoping we could take that software and actually run all our data through it and find at least the very clear seizure areas so that we could have TUH data marked for seizures.
But it's not wrong. I mean, they mark seizures wrong.
Yeah, but if you take the high, I was hoping we could take the high confidence seizures and kind of bootstrap from there.
So one thing's clear, seizures always start with bursts, then some slow movements, and then
so here's a good example of you've got a lot of activity on these channels, but it's artifacts. And I'm guessing that's because of the frequency content, that it's just too much high frequency energy for that to be considered like seizure or something. So here he's marked them as pleds. And again, you know, based on what we did yesterday, last week, I would call those triphasic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But he marked them as pled because they're occurring
for a long
time. And this should be, let's see, 22A. Yeah, these are consecutive sections of the signal.
If I don't mistake it for traces, we have three parts of this. The signal has three parts, down, up, and again.
Down, right?
Yes. Here it doesn't have the down, the last.
Well, I don't, this has kind of down,
up,
down. This has down, up, down, but there's a little there. You could split hairs and say, well, there's this behavior, but I'm not sure that's going to be a reliable cue trying to detect something like that.
I would like to do something on this.
What?
I would like to do something on this.
We all would like to do something on this. What do you mean?
Like next week or after Spirit.
Yeah, I mean, your software should be able to read these files, right? These are CDF files. So now he's calling these triphasics.
Yeah.
But then he turns around and calls these vertex. So there's a I would call that a series of spikes. He labeled it as spike.
I don't understand how he's distinguishing.
How what?
Differentiating between flats and triphasics.
Well, what makes a plet is the repeated behavior. The problem is it's not absolutely periodic. So there's an example of a vertex.
What is vertex?
Well, when we remember from last class, it was a signal that had a negative deflection and a positive deflection, but fairly small.
Steep.
No, I know, but I mean, what's the? It's an event.
As to why this is vertex,
why it's
and why something like this is spike, I'm still not clear on that yet, or multiple spikes. So here's a triphasic where the major deflection is negative. So what are spindles? Go to your glossary.
seven for it. You're looking for
so it. There's a couple spikes.
No, I didn't. I don't put the
explanation. A couple more spikes.
Okay, so I don't understand. If spikes are not important, why would you take them?
It's what Saida said earlier. If a seizure occurs, there's going to be spikes. But not all spikes are seizures.
As we saw, so far we saw at first a spike happen, something, a slow movement, and after that seizure.
And if spikes occur repeatedly, they can be GPED or PLED.
They can be GPED, PLED, or seizures?
No, they can be GPED, PLED, or spike. So the difference between spike and PLED is the periodicity, basically. If it repeats with some kind of regularity, that makes it a PLED, not a spike. So our system really tries to detect.
Confused. You know, you are telling me PLED are repeating of spikes.
Yes.
And again, seizures are repeating of spikes.
Remember, we haven't marked this data for seizures. We didn't. Not
even the concept. If PLED
the is concept PLED. Is that a PLED is not a seizure.
And both of them are
because
the
train spacing.
Of the spikes.
Right, because of the spacing. If it's a seizure, it's going to have spikes, but the spikes are going to be either in clumps. Or they're going to be irregularly spaced. So here we have spikes. Now, why wouldn't this be PLED? Well, the duration of this is longer than what you would see for PLED. But there is a sort of a repeatability here. So normally what you would do is you'd want to look at the next 10 seconds to see if this continued into the next 10
and
seconds.
And we cannot say that it's a seizure? I think we can't say that's a seizure.
This could be a seizure. This could be a seizure. In this particular marking task, we asked them to focus on spikes. We had actually sorted the data based on what the spike model found because we were short on spike data. We had enough GPED and PLED.
And why you didn't ask him to mark seizures?
Because we weren't interested in seizures at this time.
And why you weren't interested?
Because the neurologist told us they weren't interested in seizures. They told us they were interested in being able to fast forward through the waveforms to events like spikes, then they could interpret what was going on. They don't need this gets back to the way the temple neurologist asked us to develop the project. They weren't asking us to do a diagnosis. They can do the diagnosis. They were asking us to point them to sections of the waveform that were interesting.
And spikes are.
And spikes are interesting. They would want to look at those spikes. Being able to go through a waveform and focus on spikes.
But you see, there are a lot of spikes.
Right, but and they're going to have to, and as part of reading the CEG, they're going to have to reconcile those.
I mean,
so our system is actually the task of our system is to point out the potential spikes which may be the seizures, right? So, because we are not sure about whether that spike is a seizure.
If I could give maybe a comparable example to language processing, Google search allows you to find web pages with certain words on them. Google search does not give you, does not match you with web pages based on semantic content, right?
Yeah, so we provide some candidates to doctors, right?
So when you do a Google search, you say to decide. Give me all the pages that have Hawaii and vacation on them. And then you look at those pages and you make a decision about some higher level thing, like this is the particular island in Hawaii I want to go to or something like that. So we're doing what the temple neurologist said is we don't need you to diagnose for us. There's no value in that for us. I'm not agreeing with them. I'm just saying this is what they told us. What they said was we need you to make the waveform searchable. So now they can go in and they can find sections of the signal that have spikes. That was supposed to be a productivity enhancer, except that then after we got all this done, they basically came back and a number of other neurologists and said, we don't even need you to read these 20-minute EEGs because we can read those in 10 seconds. It's the LTMs and the real-time stuff and all that. So this, you could say the scope of the project has changed considerably since we started.
Maybe we should look at this with 1020 or 1010 system on the side so that we can get an idea that, you know, what montage we are looking at. It's 1020.
This is 1020, and this is TCP.
So if I'm looking at 3C3, so I want to make sure what part I'm looking at. What region of brain I'm looking at.
Oh, you want to see the diagram with the... Well, you can bring that up on your laptop.
I also have one silly question. How they are taking references?
The reference is usually the ears or the toe, from what I understand, if you're talking about ground. But again, this A2-ref, I wouldn't worry too much about the ref. This channel is essentially T4 minus A2.
I mean, in one of the videos I watched online in neuroscience scores, mm-hmm. they say that they're taking ground as a outer part of a bilateral layer. So this is my soma cell,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm getting minus 70 or minus 90 volts inside with respect to outside of the charge. So everything is neutralized inside the cell and outside the cell, but concentration of ions inside cell is very much higher. So it creates a capacitance effect between bilateral layer.
Okay.
And that gives us minus 70 volts.
Microvolts.
Microvolts. So I don't know if they're not like implanting electrodes.
They're not. These are surface electrodes.
So how do they like take reference?
Reference is the toe. They, O1 and O2 are on the ears. And they may also take the toe from sometimes. And they're measuring voltages relative to that.
Okay.
So here we have some examples of bursts that really should be suppressed. Don't ask me how you know that. I'm not. These big deflections we have are artifacts.
Again, I have a question here. What's the difference between burst of spikes and seizure?
I think seizures would last longer than a few seconds.
But in the example that you showed us, it was just 5, 4, 7 to 5 milliseconds by.
No, it lasted like.
His were like 30 seconds.
More than 30 seconds. I'll show you there.
So here are some examples of triphasics. Some examples of artifacts because of the large deflections. And I guess here he's saying these are the patient's most likely sleeping at this point. So those are vertex or K-complex. There's a good example of pleds. What?
We can easily monitor pleds.
Well, our pled detection is pretty good because we look over multiple seconds, right? And with the higher level processing. So what I'm going to do for next class is that I will assign you some TUH EEG data, and we'll just start kind of reading them and trying to identify things that we think are accurate. And then what we're going to do is when we all concur on something significant like a spike, I'll probably try to get a couple of our neurologist colleagues to look at that EEG and verify if what we think is correct.
Okay, I want to be the typical. I think we can use, if I remember the name of that German company, that one in the Europe. I think they have a free standalone application for analyzing of the EEG signals. I can work on that and
okay.
Analyze EEG signals. You wanted to buy, are you thinking about buying Persis?
They were going to give us an evaluation copy of their latest software.
Can you explain more about it?
They were going to give us a copy of their latest software. They remember they had announced that they were releasing new seizure detection software for the EMU and ICU that was really accurate. So they were willing to give us a version of that software when it became available.
Free?
Free.
Why?
In the interest of collaborating. That's another one of these collaborations that hasn't happened yet.
So we are in contact with them now?
No, we're not right now. We need to follow up with them. Okay, so I think we'll break here since a number of people are missing. And we'll pick this up next week looking at on new data.